And even with customers, like, here, this is the expectation. Like, you may have this expectation, but that's not a reality of where we're at. This is where we're at. And this is what we're doing. And the customer isn't always right. I know they think they are, but they are not always right. Hey everyone, welcome back to Business Aspirin. I'm your host, Clint Janelle. And today I have with me Nathan Grabowski with Royal Comfort out of the Denver area. Nathan, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. It's a great day. Enjoying the cool weather, although I prefer to still be 100 degrees and sun AC units. So, you know, we're kind of in the shoulder season of HVAC.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, there's beautiful. That time. It's a hard space to be in the HVAC world, right? When it's like really beautiful outside, because you're like, man, it's so nice outside, but crap, that's not good for business.
Right.
Exactly. Not good for business. And it's not cold enough for the heaters to need to be serviced yet. You're getting there though, right? What's the overnight temp now?
50s.
Okay. So that's cool enough. You wake up and need a, you know, a little crisp, and then it's daytime, might still need a little AC work, right?
Right. Yep.
Well. Man, we're hopeful for you, dude. You just keep crushing it for a little while. You know, it's hard because I always, at one point I grew up in the HVAC world, and it was always tough because you're like, man, I'm going from one hot place to the next. But when the perfect temperatures come out, I have less work to do. So I want to make sure I'm staying busy. And that's definitively something that you have to navigate in that world. So Nathan, let's talk about you guys and Royal Comfort, and let's talk about how you got into the space. Like, what did you do before Royal Comfort? How long you been with Royal Comfort? How'd we get here?
Yeah, so I bought Royal Comfort. April 1st was the first day. The previous owner, Fleming, had started the business 9 years ago. Background in HVAC, came from a fairly large company within the Denver Metro. And built a great company. And he's in his mid-60s and decided to return. And he was kind of a unique age company. So we have a small service department, one truck, and then the rest of the business is focused on custom homes, basic models. So our guys are called, right? They're experts at work and stalls and all that. From a service standpoint, we're not a large service company. We're not somebody to call 24/7 to come out to your place. Yet, you know, I'm looking to acquire a 24/7 service, stack that on as well. So that's kind of the first piece of the business. It was Royal Comfort Heating and Air Conditioning. We bought it, transferred it into Royal Comfort Home Services. So focus on HVAC, plumbing, remodel, handyman services, kind of building out. We can talk about that a little bit. I'm actually in the process of an acquisition right now on a plumbing and heating company. That'll be a great bolt-on. We can talk a little bit more about that. But my background is HVAC. My background is business. I came from a Fortune 500 company that I worked for about 5 years in warehouse procurement, commercial finance as well. My background's really pricing. That's where I'm strong at. And then prior to that, I was in logistics and truckload transportation and network design with a kind of a side gig in that company of CRM implementation. So when it comes to bringing software into HVAC and home services world, I've been a little picky on that actually, because some of the software is really great. Some of it's like, how do we not have that yet? Like, how is this not a thing for us? That's been a kind of interesting play. Doug ran a great business, but Doug was operating a legal pad and handed, here's your price book, and it's, you know, one piece of paper. And I said, well, what happens if you lose this piece of paper? He goes, well, I did that once. It was up in Winter Park, and I had to drive all the way back there to get it. And I thought, oh, my God. So, I love Doug. He was definitely old school for sure.
This is certainly not a Job Docs podcast and not a Job Docs commercial, but I may take that clip right there that you just said and be like, I had to drive all the way back to Denver from Winter Park to get my, or go whichever direction he went to go get a sheet of paper. Like, oh my gosh. Like the story we tell of guys with manila folders and all of that is so crazy. So at some level, you're kind of a tech guy. You're a business guy and a tech guy, and certainly Fortune 500 companies, you used a lot of high-end tech to get pricing structures in place and make sure you're doing procurement correctly, and even on the logistics side. So that's interesting. So did you go to school for either of those? Are you like trained for any of that, like college, or you just kind of got into those spaces?
Yeah, so my background, the business and economics, with like, I'm two classes short of a finance degree on top of it, but I was there 5 years and I was like, I got to get out. I had the fortunate luck of graduating in the spring of 2008. Jobs were very non-full at that time, as you can imagine. So I actually ended up with a truckload carrier, mid-sized truckload carrier, top 100 carrier, actually. When you think about logistics, most truckers are small businesses, 1, 2, 3, 4 trucks, and then you got really big guys, and then you got mid-sized carrier in between. So I ended up in the pricing department there. And again, that went of a, my first VP was writing pencil on printed out sheets of Excel and changing prices and type it in. And I kept pushing to internalize all those processes and things into the 21st century. So BidSquare was really big, started to cloud at that same time period. So I got really familiar with that. And then ultimately we, VP that came in and said, hey, we need an actual CRM to manage our customers, manage our pricing processes, manage our sales process. So I ended up in that world.
Okay. Yeah, but it's unique, right? And then, so what led to, I'm out of here and I'm going to go into the HVAC world? Because that's a transition.
Yeah. Yeah. So I really wanted to own my own business, and I've been entrepreneurial on the side for a while. I had a small marketing company that didn't take off, but I learned a lot trying to do your advertising with vehicles, window wraps, and it's called local commute marketing. And we kind of got going, but I always had this, you know, this major career here to fall back on. And so it's hard to dedicate. I have a really full life. I'm very active and doing things, and so the company didn't really take off. Kind of dabbled in wholesale world state as well, and just always had these side gigs. And a couple of years ago, started a business with my husband, and really that was like the light, like that was the thing, like, hey, let's start this business. We had some friends, and the first day was this logistical challenge of getting a BevMax. It's the machines with the arms, right? And they're fairly big. And my investment partner has multiple businesses across the metro, and he has a sauna business in Central. And so we placed a beverage machine there, which does fantastically well because, you know, everybody's thirsty when you're sitting in 120 degrees.
When you sweat all your fluid out. Yeah.
It was great, but the challenge was to get this machine through this door that was 4 feet off the ground because the rest of the doors were too small. This is an ancient building from early 1900s. And so I had to line everything up. And I had to get, you know, I had a half inch clearance on each side. The moving guy's forklift that had tires, so it's spinning. And you know, we went through this whole day that I had mapped out. And at the end of the day, I turned it on, put the money in, and got first beverage to draw, and it was so rewarding. I mean, that thing was so much more rewarding than I really felt like it did. Not that the work isn't important in a Fortune 500, but to have your first sale on a beverage machine to be rewarding, it's like, yeah, I got to do something different with my life. And from that point on, I was like, yep, I need to do it. Now, how to end up in HVAC? That was the question, right? I had some work done on our house that we built in 2019. So right after everything kind of escalated, anybody could ask a price for what they wanted and maybe they show up or they want in 2021. I ended up having an HVAC plumbing electric company show up and actually do the work. It was two guys, very professional, but man, was the price high. And I looked at that, and I'm a pricing guy, right? I can break things down. I understand hours. I just back into it because that's what I do. Business, like trying to figure out, you know, how to operate. And I said, man, the margin on this business, I need one of these companies. And so it was that was a combination of my partner, friend, several of us, right, have some helping get going. He was a landscaping, business to many, many millions, sold it to private equity, retired. Retiring is not a great thing for a 30-year-old. He decided to get back in the business and start helping guys like me businesses off the ground or buy businesses as well. We had a mutual friend that fortunately passed away from cancer and pneumonia in February. We got to spend some time together. We've been talking about this for a while, so we ended up the next week and with his family friends who Kathy the street Kathy changed his diapers and he had been talking. Funny thing is he talking about this, said, hey, yeah, my neighbors have an HVAC company for a week. And the funny thing is, I'm on by the cell and I'm on all these sites looking at companies. I still have a folder sitting in my Google Drive that has Royal Comfort, absolute no. It was a no. I looked at it back in September. The price of it was too high based on the numbers and the thing. And then we got to talking, falling out of contract previously with somebody else, and we ended up being able to strike a deal that worked for both of us. And I'm really happy. It's a great brand. I've got great guys. It's a great legacy to build on. So that's kind of how we went from 0 to 60, and then all of a sudden it was closed. It was like here was this dream. I think that work I did was 2021 or 2022. And now it was 2025 and I was out. It was like just a flip. It was like I'm giving up the safety of a corporate career. I'm gonna climb out of that rat race and climb into a new one. I follow somebody you're probably both familiar with, Cody Sanchez, and she is phenomenal. Great person, podcast to listen to, book to read now. I've been following her before her book was out for the last couple of years. And I was introduced when I talked to another friend about the vending business. And this friend, I ran into her outside the studio and she said, hey, I told her what we were doing. She's like, man, you really got to follow Cody Sanchez. Started listening to Cody's stuff, started implementing it, started the search process, started to
Sure.
really understand how do you price these businesses. And the numbers are easy for me. I'm a numbers guy. So, but once I got that kind of turning, that was easy. Managing a team, managing through switching from the corporate world to the trade world, it's a different group. People is so interesting. These guys are like, yeah, we're gonna talk this through the way we're gonna talk it through, and we're not gonna send a stabbing email to you and work it that way. We're just gonna hammer this out right here right now. And so
The blue collar world's a little grittier and at the same time a little more peaceful, right? Because it's not that backhanded drama that's associated with everything. It's like, listen, dude, what the hell was that? What are you doing? And they get stuff resolved. It's great. Okay, so if we were talking from this perspective as a business aspirant, where we're trying to talk to entrepreneurs that are coming into something, on your story on how you wound up in the HVAC space, what advice would you give to someone that is looking to transition, and maybe in some cases out of the corporate world because they're tired of that grind? What advice would you give them on looking for and deciding about the vertical they're going into based on how you did it?
Right. I would find something that you can, I mean, this is cliche, but be passionate about, right? And even though I don't have the background in HVAC or in the home services, it is something that I understand as a homeowner. I've gone through the pains of it. As a husband of somebody who's a real estate agent and has dealt with those companies in inspection periods and all that, like I understood the need and the need for people that aren't going to rip you off, right? That aren't going to sell you a system you don't need. So that's where my passion comes, is that I saw, hey, this is something everybody needs. Of course, I wanted something fairly recession resistant. That was key for me. I had a career and salary, and And I wanted a piece of advice I'd give is you really have to decide if you're going to be the general manager or if you're going to be big enough that you can hire that general manager and just work on the business. Now, I bought this business thinking I was going to GM it and quickly realizing that that's not the best use of time. I need to be working on the business, but I don't necessarily have the EBITDA to support that, right? So all of a sudden it's like, hey, we got to quickly another company. And I'll be honest, like, hey, this next company has come to me has just been, people say it's a coincidence. I say it's my higher power God really working through this with me. And as you put that out there, you put that energy out there, things show up, and that's what's happened. But, you know, back to the question, like, how do you choose that, right? I would say it's got to be something I'd be passionate about. I see size. So is that mean you're going to do this side hustle like the vending was for us for a while? Prove out that, yeah, I have the wherewithal to business, you know, learn accounting if you don't know accounting, learn inventory management, learn pricing, learn customer service, all of those sorts of things, and start to build that skill set. That's probably the right way to for a lot of people. And it was for us, but then like, what's the next thing? And how boring of a business do you want, right? When I think about Cody and I think about what she's talking about, boring businesses, car washes, you know, yeah, those are a little more passive. Would I say that HVAC is a boring business? No, I would not say that at all. I have not been bored, and it's been a hell of a lot of work. And so think about what is it? If you really want a boring business, you got to think about what that looks like versus is it really an active business? And then again, the skill set to run it. Yes, I have the skill set to build and acquire businesses and put processes together and build software. Is it really the highest and best use of time to do sales estimates and to try and figure out, you know, what size furnace needs to be in this custom home that's, you know, a 10,000 square foot home? Could I get there? Sure. Should I? Probably not. And therefore, I hired somebody and merge businesses with Roman, and he's right hand man. He'll be my general manager, and we really work together. But that means quickly because we have a higher EBITDA to support the overhead.
Sure. And so I think you make a valid point here that I want to dig into a little bit, where most individuals who jump into the home service business, at least, do so because they have experience in the home service business. Like they grew up plumbing, or they grew up in HVAC, or they grew up with an electrician, or whatever the case may be. And so they're good at what they do, and they want to own their own business. What would you say to any naysayers or anybody that just might have a comment that says, well, you have to have experience in order to run a successful business? Do you have to know what you're doing in that particular field to be able to have a successful business?
I'd say nope. I'd say you have to be able to run a business, right? And you must have the knowledge and skill set. So you must have the right people on your team with knowledge that you can leverage, right? If I wanted to bring Roman on, then I would have had to leverage my guys a little bit more, maybe hold them for certain aspects. I would have had to build a little bit different tool set in order to accomplish that. And fortunately, I don't want to say I didn't need to. I am learning as I go. I have found that I love sales. Anything that gets me away from my computer, I love. I spent 10, 12 hour days staring at a computer. I don't love that, right? This morning, I 2 months in, work comp claim, guy dislocated shoulder, just had surgery, just came back yesterday on light duty. I'm handing over, you know, part of the paperwork to him. He's going to manage a schedule on our basements. He's going to manage the invoicing. I was going to hand that to him anyways, but I get to hand it to him sooner. But what that requires is training him. It requires having good systems and processes in place, documenting those processes when doing this. So I would say, you know, to the naysayers, you have experience. I don't think you do. You gotta have the passion. Intelligent. I mean, I think if you don't have the ambition to learn, you won't be able to do it. That's for sure. Like I've had to learn systems. I have to understand the pricing. I have to own the P&L. of my business. But do I have to, you know how to fix an AC or a furnace? No. But I like to go with, and I like to watch the process. I like to watch the customer interaction. I like to understand, like, what could we be doing better? Oh, why'd you leave those PVC trimmings on the floor? Like, I know it's in a crawl space, but, like, I don't like that, right? I don't like that. That's where there's value add. You can, like, improve quality company. Those are my skill sets, so that's where I'm going to leverage. But, again, I've got to acquire the skills that I have. Either I've done it personally or I've got to hire that. And for me, it was a hiring decision.
Yeah. So I think it's valid. Like, you have to be able to, one, you got to have some grit, because running a business is not easy. It has its challenges. It can be difficult. So you got to be gritty enough to be willing to go, okay, I'm going to dig in and I'm going to fight through this piece. Secondarily, I agree. You don't have to have any skill set in that particular vertical, but you have to be able to figure out processes. 100% agree with you. Because I think processes are what allow you to be able to grow your business and scale it, and then hand off pieces to shoulder injury guy and go, take this and run with it, because you've already built out the processes. So I agree with you. But at some level, how do you learn how to create a process then for something you don't know how to do? How did you navigate that piece? Because if somebody else comes in and they're like, hey, I do like the fact that Nathan started his own HVAC business without any, maybe I should jump into building tires. How would you understand the process of what it takes to run a business of a certain vertical? How did you get there?
Sure. Well, as part of the acquisition process, and this key, I had a handoff with the owner, right? So a little bit different than if we're doing a startup, right? That's going to be challenging, right? So if you're going to do a startup, we have a startup in our cleaning business, residential cleaning, light commercial. That's a startup. I will tell you that is significantly harder than acquiring a business. When talks about that and other people that are training people on how to buy businesses, there's a reason for it. It is actually easier to acquire. And for me, I negotiated 6 weeks with Doug. Now, Doug is wanting to step back, and I don't think Doug got the workout. I mean, I think Doug had to go on vacation and rest after 6 weeks of dealing with me, because we spent 8 hours together, maybe 10, and I'm sitting there just drilling him, questioning him, walking through everything. It was exhausting, right, to learn that. I spent $1,500 on a 3-day course on manual JDS, which is how you determine, you know, the HVAC system layout, the air needed, the equipment needed. Was I going to become an expert in 3 days? Absolutely not. Did it give me enough knowledge to then be able to ask additional questions? Absolutely. I then had the luxury of spending 2 days with ADR training as well. And that was how people like me, or certainly people that have grown up in the trades, how do you actually run an HVAC and a plumbing business? So there's training out there in all of these niches that I didn't even know about until I got thrown into it. And I'm really glad that I took that training, because then what it does is it teaches you what questions do I need to ask. I don't know what I don't know, but I do need to figure out what I need to know, right? And then start to figure that out in these processes. And it's not overnight. There are still things that I do not have in our system that I wish I would have had 2 months ago. But I have to kind of divide and conquer. I have to prioritize, what challenge am I going to handle this week? And I want to knock that out, off my plate. That'll improve that process, right? And so it's going through.
So for you, process. You have a process for that, right? You have a process for finalizing processes. So tell me, what is the, you were talking about, you don't know what you don't know. What's the most valuable thing you've learned to date about jumping off and running your own business away from the corporate world, away from Fortune 500? What's the most valuable thing you've learned so far?
I think it's to really trust in yourself, trust in your people, right? Your people know the business if they're working in it, and they'll know if they're slacking, they'll know what's going on, and have the tough conversations sooner rather than later. And that's true also in the corporate world, but remember, there's drama, there's HR departments, there's all that. Like, you can cut through all that bullshit and come straight to, let's have these conversations, tell me what I need to know, help me understand that. And that was different. Like, that was the difference between corporate. I got to put on my perfect LinkedIn smile and make sure that I'm looked at and I'm saying the smart things that I need to say and dot my I's, cross my T's. No, this is like real world now. You're in business. You don't have time for that. You got to have tough conversations with customers and be willing to do that too. So I would say, like, learning to have tough conversations right away, don't put it off. When you're sitting on huge receivables and you've got pain to make, you got to learn how to leverage that. What do I have with this customer that I need to do in order to get them to pay me? Right.
Sure.
Because I've got bills to pay. They've got bills to pay. I understand that. So tough conversations, having them early is what I would say.
Dude, I love hearing that, right? Like, the reality is, and I think that's part of why Cody is about boring businesses, right? Because there's less, I think she's great. I love what she's doing. I think she's spectacular. I think she's brilliant. But boring businesses have less tough conversations, right? So you have a car wash, you're not talking to anybody. You don't really have any employees. You're going and collecting your money and filling up some soap or whatever once a week. Running an HVAC business where now I've got crews in the field and got customers that I'm having conversations with. I've got trucks I'm putting on the road. I got to worry about whether we're going to run over somebody in a truck, make stupid decisions doing that. All of that. And I think it's vital that you learn how to have those conversations early and often. Like Gary Vee says, you got to be willing to fire fast. Now, I agree with that statement, but I also think we need to be willing to train first to make sure expectations were set correctly. Yep. Yep. And people know what you're expecting of them. And then if they can't do it, you got to be willing to fire fast. But you got to make sure you're getting the right people in the right seat. And if you're not, you got to be willing to go, hey, we need to talk about this. We need to talk about what it's like. And even with customers, like, hey, here, this is the expectation. Like, you may have this expectation, but that's not a reality of where we're at. This is where we're at. And this is what we're doing. And the customer isn't always right. I know they think they are, but they are not always right. And so you got to learn how to do that. Sometimes you have to have that conversation with them too.
And, you know, I will say I like customers always right, but they're not right. What I would say is, and we deal in the car world, right? So I've had this conversation with my guys, because what I've noticed in the trades, in the training that I've sat on and what's been dialogued, is that people kind of get set ways. This way, it only gets done this way. The longer people stay in the trades, the bumpier they seem a little bit around certain things, right? And so first I kind of had to really gain the trust of my guys, right? I needed them to understand, like, I like quality. I'm going to be fine on that. I expect you interacting with our customers in a fair, reasonable manner. One of the first things, you know, that I said to these guys is that I like making money and I like making sales. But I swear to God, if you sell an old lady that has a 5-year-old system, a new system that she doesn't need, I will fire you. Like, there will be no second chance. We don't do things like that. That is not the kind of company that we are. So that set the stage. We're a quality, reputable company. That's how we business. That's what I expect of you. And then the next thing is, yeah, this tough conversation around, hey, we're going to change kind of how we do this. I don't like saying no, especially on custom. Somebody spending $10 million on a home, if they want something slightly different, they want to do this. So I figured out, well, what can we and can't we do? And what's going to be the threshold for measuring, right? And so I kind of came up with these three C's. Does it meet code? Does it or does it not compromise the system in a way that's going to cause an issue? Oh, theoretically, I think that might be the issue. No, does it or does it compromise the system? And what does it cost? And if the customer is willing to pay the cost and it doesn't compromise the system and it meets code, then we're going to do it because that's what the customer wants. And so now they can make these decisions without having to always bring it to me. Does it meet these three things? Have we priced it appropriately because it's something unique that they want? Yeah, okay, let's do it. We deliver comfort, right? So those three C's, once we hit them, deliver comfort. So that's a formula, right? So I'm a formula, I'm a numbers guy. We're kind of back to that process thing. How do you do that, right? Well, you just, I don't want to say you just figure it, but you have to think about these ways to deliver these messages and get your team on board with the vision for the company. And that was really, really important, because these guys you know, they worked for Kathy, and not everything was always explained to them. They were kind of just like, go do your job. I don't like that. These guys need ownership in the company. Yes, they're not owners, but they need to have ownership in the outcome so that we can move up. You know, I have guys want to set their toolbox down and manage teams. Well, that means we have to do really quality work. We got to pass inspections. We deliver to the customers so we can get more customers, can get the repeat customers. We can build this business so we can get more guys in so you can become a manager. That's what I want for my team. I want all of my guys to be moving up and to have opportunity. And they will as we grow. And they understand that.
Well, I love when you started this section talking about the integrity side of things, because, you know, we have a restoration company here in DFW, and the number of plumbers that we've dealt with that want to refer work to us, and they're trying to make something out of nothing because they want to get paid a referral fee. And I tell them all the time, and I tell my guys, like, I'm not going to make this into something that it's not. If it's in the best interest of the customer to say, hey, listen, you can borrow this fan from me, or you can go rent a fan from Home Depot, but you don't really have a major issue that really requires you spending thousands of dollars with a restoration company to make this work. And yeah, I mean, we're running a business. We're trying to be profitable. We need to make this stuff work, but at the expense of doing it the right way is so kudos to you for that, man, because especially when it's tight and tough and you're starting out and people are trying to navigate new things, it's like, not all money is good money, but sometimes people think it is. And you take projects on that you shouldn't. And so nice job on holding the line there and doing that sort of thing.
Thanks.
What is something that you wish you would have known before you got started?
I think I knew it. I think you just have to experience working capital and the impact that slow payments will have on you. You have to be prepared for it. You have to know your numbers, right? So in this industry, when I went to that training, I learned it's $150,000 million in revenue. I think that's right. I run lean. I've had the fortune, you know, of being able to run lean and be able to go back to my investment partner. And I've run leaner than I should. But if I didn't have that luxury, it would be tough, right? I would want to get home equity, putting on cards and juggling. So do not underestimate how much capital you need. Now, they said if you're dealing with commercial, it's even more because they have even longer terms on commercial projects. And like commercial projects, your terms just really go out.
So and
for me,
and you turned a wrench the wrong direction slightly, and now I don't have to pay you for another 60 days because you didn't cross your T perfectly or something. Some of those commercials can get crazy. So I get that too.
Yeah. So working capital, making sure that you have enough, because there's nothing scarier, I think, than looking at your bank account. Like, how many payrolls do I have left before I'm out of money? Right. That's enough to kind of always, you learn to look at the numbers a little bit different. How many payrolls do I have left? You know, where are my cards sitting? Where are my terms with my sitting? Like, you got to look at all of that on your balance sheet and say, well, how much working capital is sitting there, and then get through the head and shoulder seasons. You know,
so for you, where does that land? How much cushion do you want to have?
I mean, I'd love, you know, on a $2 million business, I'd love $200,000 sitting in the bank that I never touch. Is that realistic today? No. Because cost of capital as well, if I'm not using it right. But, you know, that was a number that, you know, I was given by the previous owner, like, hey, you know, I always kept this amount and it seemed well for the size that we were. I highly recommend that to you. I mean, like I said, pay for that capital anyways if I've been there. And the nice thing is I have the ability to grab it if I need. But if you're starting out, if you're buying a business, I would highly recommend you make sure you understand what the industry standard is for working capital in your business.
So is there anything you wish you had done differently?
I mean, overall, I do wish I would have bought a bigger company. And not that bigger just means like, hey, I'm going to have more money. But finding out and learning that, like, I'm not going to GM this thing by myself. And not just GM, like, I could have be the sales manager, right? Be the one in the field doing the estimates day in, day out, and running the company and trying to grow it. I'd had the ability, I think, to faster had I just bigger company. So if I had a bond in the $3 to $5 million range versus kind of that mid ones to two, then I would have had the luxury of a higher EBITDA, and I would be able to make that. So I love where we're at, and from here, and we're already stacking on and bolting on another company that's going to get us much closer to what I really want as a minimum. Yeah, make sure the size is right. I kind of mentioned earlier, because once you have it, now you have to figure out how to get the really right. You got to get sales to support it. That's very more similar to running a startup than what Cody talks about, the right size business, and just, you know, hey, I got the GM in place. Maybe I stay in my corporate career. I wanted corporate career. So I knew I was buying too small in a way. Like, I knew it up front. I was just willing to do it because, like, I'm sick of waiting. I'm going to do this. I'm going to figure out. I'm going to pivot. I have the luxury of being able to take a little more risk than maybe the average person and willing to do that. Which is funny, because for so many years I didn't. I kind of got stuck in that rat race, right? I read Kiyosaki in their 2000s. I knew what the rat race was, and I still got stuck in it, right? And it's hard. It's powerful. Those golden handcuffs are super powerful. Fear will sit there. And what I can say is, I've been on a journey, and I've had to get really, really in touch with God, my higher power, as I say it, and really have some faith that things are going to work out, or that I'm going to be able to figure it out, and that I'm going to be willing and able to ask people for help when I need it, and humble myself in that way, because this isn't really, yes, it's my company. Yes, I have names on the ownership documents, but at the end of the day, we're all just in service, right? We serve the capital that we acquire. We serve the people that are working for us and that we work with, and including our customers and vendors. I push my vendors as much as I push my employees. And when I get told, like, well, we just don't do it that way, I said, well, that process is kind of broken. I think you should look at it. Like, I'm not opposed to pushing everybody to get better, and I have people to push me to get better too. But, you know, back to like this path, I just had to take kind of this faith, right? That like, it's time. I had a mile marker. I turned 40 in March, and for the last couple of years, I said I really wanted to do this by 40. And we closed on April 1st. I missed it by 9 days, but I'll still take that as a win on accomplishing a life goal. And so that was kind of what really guided me towards jumping in finally and throwing away the golden handcuffs. And now that I'm here, I've got to make it work, because I don't think I could go back. I mean, if I had to pay the bills, right? Yes, I could do it. And there's nothing wrong with it. I don't want to, you know, crawl over. You know, people make great money and people love the job and the work that they do. If you're an entrepreneur, and certainly I was undiagnosed ADHD. I am not treating through medicine, but I found that out recently. And they really love it. Function disorder. I don't think it is. What I've come to realize is there's people that are meant to basket weave and grow the crops, and there are people that go out and fight the lions and take down the. And that's what I was meant to do. And I was, I could weave a lot of a basket, but it was really unfulfilling for me. And now I feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be.
Well, that's excellent. Well, we're close to our time. So, one last question. So the last question, last thought for me is, has there been anything that just blindsided you? Didn't see it coming.
Don't just be prepared to like know that. Not really blindsided me. I would say be prepared for the unexpected. So, you know, you're gonna get hit with the thing, like a truck breaks down, then that same damn truck's gonna break down again, right? And there's you're just gonna have to roll with it, right? You're gonna have to figure it out. Or, you know, to get a work comp claim first 2 months of business, right? I know the rates are going to go up. It hurts to be down already. Also, having to navigate that, right? Blindsided, if you know that it's going to happen in business, just the way life happens in life. And I love what Cody says, to kind of go back to Cody. She's kind of a rock star. I love following her. Like, choose your hard, right? And I kind of live by that, right? Like I walk and I face to it, right? And I've got a sticker on my computer right here that's a bison. And it's face the fear, right? The story of the bison is that bison are the only animal that turn around and walk into the storm, right? Yeah. Why? Because they get through it faster. You try to run away from it, it's going to catch you eventually. So why not just turn and
bear it? You got to go through it, right? You got to go through it. So go through it and get it over with. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love it. One last piece of advice for anyone?
I'd say like trust that you can do, like you have in you more than you think that you have. And just
you can do hard things, right?
You can do hard things. You will get through it. And don't be afraid to fail. I know that's cliche, but like once you get through the willingness to like, hey, if this doesn't work and it fails, I can always do something else. Like you don't fail until you stop, right? And we're here until we're not. So you might as well have some fun along the way.
Yeah. And from that perspective, right? If you're quick to want to quit, you'll quit quickly. So go do hard shit and work hard and let's dig through this and let's make things happen. Nathan, man, it's been great having you on, dude. I really appreciate you being here. I appreciate the wisdom and the insight. What a great conversation.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
And I may have to hit you up, man. I love the Denver market just because I like to ski. So coming through there, I'll go pick up that piece of paper at Winter Park for you and bring it back.
There you go.
I appreciate you, man. Take care.
Thanks, Clint. You too.